This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America on this edition of the program. Fewer than 6 months remain before Americans return to the polls to decide if they will give U.S. President Donald Trump a second term or replace him with presumptive Democratic nominee, former Vice President Joe Biden. In addition, the entire lower chamber of Congress, the House of Representatives, currently controlled by Democrats, is up for re-election. 35 seats in the Republican-controlled Senate are at stake. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel, coming to you from my makeshift home studio in Washington, D.C. Barely 4 months ago, the underlying fundamentals of the U.S. economy appeared strong and the stock market was reaching historic highs. But along came the coronavirus, which required the imposition of strict social distancing rules, which shut down large sectors of the economy, particularly the hospitality and travel industry. Many analysts on all sides of the political spectrum have criticized the Trump administration for not acting soon enough to prevent the spread of the virus. This past week, Rick Bright, a former top vaccine official who was removed from his post last month, testified before the House Committee on Energy and Commerce that Washington should develop a national coordinated response based in science, lest the pandemic become worse, causing unprecedented illness and fatalities. Nonetheless, despite important measures taken at the national level, President Trump has defended a more decentralized strategy of delegating to the states the job of testing, obtaining personal protective equipment, supplies, and deciding the timetable regarding when and how to open their economies. He continued to say last week that he feels that the virus will eventually go away on its own. However, many health experts, chief among them Dr. Anthony Fauci, head of the National Institute of Allergy and key member of the White House's coronavirus task force, disagrees with this rosy assessment. With less than 6 months to go before the election in November, President Trump is anxious to reopen schools and the economy, an economy which, just 4 months ago, was one of the key arguments for his reelection. However, in the wake of the pandemic, the U.S. unemployment rate has risen above 15%. More than 36 million Americans have filed for unemployment. In Dr. Anthony Fauci's testimony on May 12, before the Senate, he warned that, quote, states and cities face serious consequences if they open up too quickly, closed quote. He urged states not to reopen until they know that they have the capabilities to handle an inevitable uptick in cases once they relax stay-at-home orders. In Wall Street Journal, columnist Gerald Seib quotes former White House political director for President Clinton, Doug Sosnick, who says, quote, Donald Trump's chances for reelection have diminished significantly due to the outbreak of the COVID-19 virus, close quote. So joining me to discuss the prospects for President Trump and the presumptive Democratic rival, former Vice President Joe Biden, are our veteran political analysts, John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way. And both gentlemen join me via Microsoft Teams. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carol.
Great to be here.
Well, gentlemen, let's start first with you, as always, John Fortier. Give me your sense of what President Trump is dealing with right now, politically and in the run-up to his reelection. He did a number of press briefings several weeks ago, using them sort of in lieu of rallies, trying to underscore what he thinks he's doing to combat the virus. Nonetheless, death tolls rise. We're still not doing enough testing, according to many health experts. How do you see his predicament at this point?
Well, I think if we went back to not so long ago, but it seems like a world away, earlier this year, Donald Trump was in a pretty good position to be reelected, but it was certainly not a guarantee. It looked like it would be a very competitive election. You mentioned that he had some great strengths, the economy, which is always a strength for an incumbent if it's good. So the economy was very good. He was an incumbent. That's usually helpful. And his polling numbers weren't as bad as some people would say, or as bad as they were earlier in his presidency. And they were creeping up a bit, but they were kind of in the 43-44% range of job approval. And so we were looking at an election we thought we knew the contours of. We thought the election was going to be relatively competitive with a decent chance of either side winning. Certainly Democrats having Joe Biden rather than someone like Bernie Sanders as the nominee was helpful to Democrats. But I think we still kind of knew what we were going to get for an election, the type of election. And then all of a sudden, the world changed. And when the world changes, it's very unpredictable. Interestingly, Donald Trump, there are two things that I think are going on. One, I mean, the economy is terrible, is falling apart. It will perhaps come back a bit, but I don't think we've even felt the full extent. We're seeing some of the numbers, but the rise in unemployment is tremendous. You know, it's also an emergency. People are looking to a president, to an executive for leadership. And I think we're very divided on his leadership. Republicans thinking he's doing a pretty good job. Democrats think he's not doing a good job. Usually there's more of a honeymoon period. Maybe there's a little bit of it for the president. But interestingly enough, his numbers are really not so different today than they were before the crisis. But I think that's a little deceiving. We'll have to wait till this all comes out. I don't think the economy is going to get good or anywhere near where it was before the election. And it may sink in with people that's a tough thing. I look to the Great Depression. If you looked around the world, a Republican was in charge of the United States, Herbert Hoover. He was blamed. He was thrown out of office. But in other parts of the world, parties of the left were in charge. They were thrown out of office. There's a sense sometimes the American people will say it's just not very good. The economy's bad. That's his worry. On the positive side, perhaps as we come through this, he'll be seen as someone, not by everyone, but enough people as leading well enough. And I think there's a little bit of uncertainty about Joe Biden. Not that I think he wasn't a stronger candidate than some of the others, but that Joe Biden is kind of forgotten now. He's behind the scenes and not getting much press because of the coronavirus. We are going to have a campaign eventually in the fall, and perhaps that contrast will be something the president can glom onto. But I would say, you know, even though the numbers look the same for Trump, they're basically the same number of people approving of him as before, there's a greater worry for Republicans that the economy will be the thing that does in Donald Trump in the fall.
So, Jim Kessler, do you think the economy might do in President Trump? And the fact that he continues to deflect blame for managing the crisis, he's still blaming even former President Barack Obama for a lot of what he says is not going right. How do you see the prospects?
So I agree with a lot of what John said. The economy was pretty good before this all happened, and his numbers still weren't that great. His approval ratings weren't as good as you'd expect to see for a president that was the country's at peace, the economy was doing well, wages were going up. Here's what I think is the big problem for Donald Trump. He would like to be able to press the erase button for January and February, because what happened was, as it became apparent to many that we were going to have a healthcare crisis that could turn into an economic crisis, he was really playing it down and really was dismissive of the threat of the coronavirus. And he would like to erase it because he is just on camera over and over and over again, really dismissing the seriousness of it, comparing it almost to a cold or to a flu season, and that it's just going to run its course and go away. Meanwhile, at the exact same time, Joe Biden put out an op-ed at the very end of January that says, this is going to be the big problem. So on the number one issue that people are likely going to be voting on in November, they have two contrasting candidates, one who was really cavalier about it, and the other who was very serious about it. And let me add just one more thing to it. Trump has never been a believe the experts, believe the scientists, believe the doctors guy. And there is a wing of the Republican Party that is really skeptical of elite opinions. Well, that skepticism, you know, just bit him on the backside. So will people, even if the country is recovering at that point, say, you know, I think I've had enough of someone who's playing it by their gut and is not listening to experts. So I think those factors are a pretty big problem for Donald Trump as he goes into the November elections, especially when you add on to the fact that, you know, the economy could be dreadful and people are saying, like, look, it's just time for a change as well.
So back to you, John Fortier. We'll talk more about this after the break, but let's go into the mechanics of the election, because we saw this during the primaries. So many Democratic primaries were postponed and others are being conducted with a lot of mail-in ballots, absentee ballots. And many analysts are saying that we're going to have to do much more mail-in voting, not entirely for the November elections. But we know that Mr. Trump thinks that a lot of people cheat with mail-in voting. Now, there's not a lot of evidence to support that, but in a New York Times article, he was quoted as saying, it should be you go to a booth and you proudly display yourself. Now, that is ideal. But talk about how this controversy is really important, because a lot of Democrats think that the Republicans, particularly Mr. Trump and the Republican Party, are going to really try to prevent mail-in voting or discredit it and maybe try to discredit the results of the election. So talk about that dilemma.
Well, first, you've given me the opportunity to plug a book that I wrote long ago about absentee and early voting back in 2006, Absentee and Early Voting Trends, Perils, and Promises. And I will say, just from my perspective, I have not been somebody who has been enthusiastic about the expansion of voting by mail. But it is something that our country has moved up until that book and since then in a pretty dramatic way.
But John, let me just interrupt real quickly because I forgot to mention in the question, the reason why we need to think more about this is because the pandemic, unlike what Mr. Trump does say that, oh, it's going to go away. Most health experts are saying we're going to have a resurgence and that there has to be a way to vote without going in person. There has to be that option on the table, less more and more people get infected.
Sure. And again, I'm not somebody who in normal times is a big advocate of expansion of vote by mail. We have seen a big expansion of it, though, just slowly over time, with roughly about 25% of the country voting that way in the last presidential election and a lot of people voting early before the election. So that we've been changing the way we've been voting slowly over time for quite a while. I do think we are going to need more options for voting by mail and probably some other options, too, to make our voting safe in the fall. We may not be faced with quite the emergency that we have in some of these primaries where suddenly something has come upon us we weren't ready for. But certainly there is the possibility that there could be reasons people have a hard time getting to polling places or just that people feel more comfortable voting by mail. So I think we're going to see an uptick in that. The difficulty is we are a country that votes very differently in different states. We already have some states that are voting 100% by mail, have been doing so for several years. But we have other states that are more traditional and vote at polling places. It is not realistic to think that all of the country is going to turn to voting by mail exclusively. I think what we're going to see is an upswing in that. We're going to see places moving to more of that and voters demanding more and some other options. That's going to be what voters want in some ways, and it's also going to be a logistical challenge and perhaps cause some problems. So I do think there are some issues with voting by mail, but I also think we're likely to see more of it to try to get our election running well so that in November, people don't just have to show up on a polling place on election day, but they might vote by mail or at an early voting site and have those options depending on where they are and what they feel comfortable with.
Turning to you, Jim Kessler, I'm going to merge two issues, and that is Mr. Trump's desire to, if not eliminate, then debilitate the U.S. Postal Service. And of course, that's going to be critical if we're going to do more mail-in ballots. The chairman of the Democratic National Committee said he thinks that Republicans are trying to dismantle the Postal Service. And former Vice President Joe Biden, who is the presumptive Democratic nominee, feels that it's possible that Mr. Trump may be trying to bankrupt the Postal Service as a way to prevent vote-by-mail programs and even potentially sabotage the November election. What are your thoughts?
It's interesting. We could have the Postal Service be a presidential election matter for the first time since the 19th century. I mean, I would not be surprised if Joe Biden makes preserving the U.S. Postal Service one of the campaign pledges that he has. Part of it is because there is going to be more vote-by-mail. We need that infrastructure so that it happens. The other is there are a group of Americans that are working not from their homes through this crisis and are risking their lives doing so. And among them, it's the U.S. Postal Service that's doing it. So they're in the group of people like folks working at grocery stores, healthcare workers, et cetera, that are, now that we're working from home, we see them every single day coming to our door. Look, I think it's unfortunate that part of the Republican strategy for winning elections is to try and suppress the number of people who can vote. If there was one attribute about the Republican Party that I wish I could change as a Democrat, it would be that. It's sort of a longstanding problem that they've had. One of the things that's important in this election, though, is, as John pointed, every state has a lot of latitude to choose how elections are going to be run. In our presidential elections, as people have noted from the last several races, it's not the popular vote, it's the Electoral College vote. So really, six states are going to decide whether Joe Biden or Donald Trump is the next president: Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Florida, North Carolina, and Arizona. So it's really how did those states run their election. Well, Arizona is basically a mail-in state anyway, so I don't think you're going to see much change there. Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania have Democratic governors, so they will probably do whatever they can to make sure the most number of people can vote. Florida has a history of trying to stop people from voting. So a referendum was passed that allowed felons, once they left prison, to be able to vote again in Florida. That was going to allow a lot of people, many of them African-American and Latino, to vote. They tend to vote Democratic. But now they're putting up additional roadblocks there because they want to keep those vote totals down. So I think depending on what state you're in, the ease of which you'll be able to vote, either mail-in or in person, is going to differ.
Well, we'll have more on that in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, senior vice president for policy at Third Way. They join me via Microsoft Teams. We are discussing the unique challenges to campaigning and voting in the upcoming presidential elections in November. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel, VOA, or connect with us on Facebook. Well, here's a shout out to one of our most loyal fans, Taufik Jalte from Morocco. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, John Fortier. With respect to the elections, there was a comment by Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law and a senior White House advisor, last week saying that he's not going to rule out the possibility of postponing the presidential election in November, presumably because of the coronavirus, et cetera. But you know, as an expert, that's set in federal law, and there's no way that the election can be postponed.
Right. Look, I'm not sure the Jared Kushner's comment was taken right or said very carefully, but the simple point is we do have a single election day in America set by a law made by Congress. The president doesn't have the ability to move the date of that election. I don't want to alarm people, but I guess there is the thought of, well, what would happen if something terrible happened on election day and it just had to be postponed and moved? And there, I think there is a little bit of confusion as to what would really happen. The president certainly doesn't have the right to move the election. It's not his job. The states, maybe on their own, might. And the other thing I'll add is in the presidential election, unlike others, is one that is really limited by time. We have only a very short amount of time to be able to resolve it. We have the Electoral College meeting in December and then the Congress counting the votes in January. We don't have the luxury to go on for months and months counting the votes as we might in some other seats. So the simple answer is this election should not be moved. And even if we thought of a crisis, we don't give that power to the president. So I think we really need to stick to the date that we have and the emergency, try to deal with as best we can, because moving that date is not really allowed, but also it's very hard to do.
So back to you, Jim Kessler, with respect to a comment like that, which I think he later disavowed. But just the thought that someone would say that, well, we may consider postponing the election. Is there a concern among Democrats that President Trump is perhaps trying to delegitimize the contest and maybe say it was rigged because of more mail-in ballots or statements like this? What are your sources telling you?
Many Democrats that I talk to are in a panic that somehow Donald Trump is going to steal this election. There are many very intelligent, very well-read, very learned Democrats who say even if Donald Trump loses, he'll refuse to leave the White House in January. I'm not saying that they're right. I'm just saying that there is a feeling among many Democrats that whatever it will take for Trump to steal the election, he will do. I am not of that opinion, but there is a feeling among a sizable number of Democrats that the level of cheating and dishonesty that could go on, including canceling the date of an election, could happen. And then there is a breathless media that whenever somebody like Jared Kushner makes a statement like he did, it's, you know, on the front page and is talked about for the next 96 hours. John Fortier is right. Election day will be election day. We have to remember that election day is actually not the day that we vote. It's the last day we're allowed to vote. My guess is more than half of Americans will vote before election day this time around. As John pointed out, that trend has been happening already. I think governors are going to be doing their utmost, along with the Secretary of State in their respective states, to make sure people can do early voting and absentee balloting if they want to. And I believe that this election will go off feeling normal at this point.
Back to you, John Fortier. You know, we've been talking about the president's prospects and the fact that there are these so-called battleground states, six of them. We call them also swing states: Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Arizona, North Carolina, Florida, where really the election will most likely be decided. But what about the Senate? Is the Senate up for grabs in your view? Are there some seats that the Democrats could potentially flip and put current Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell out of his job? And what are those states in which you think they have a fighting chance?
Well, the Senate, I think until a few months ago, I think the status quo, the Republicans keeping the Senate and Democrats keeping the House, was the most likely scenario. We do see some movement, I think, towards Democrats. Democrats' prospects in the Senate are better than they were a couple months ago. That's partly because of some new candidates coming in and partly because of some general movement in the polls. A state like Colorado looks like it's leaning in the Democratic direction, and Arizona maybe a little more slightly leaning, but there. Those were the states we were really watching before, but there are a number of Republican states which are still probably Republican favored, but are becoming much, much more competitive. States like North Carolina and Maine and perhaps Iowa, Montana with a new candidate, even though it's a very Republican state. So if we don't see a great movement more in the Republican direction, the Republicans might just hold on to the Senate because of those small number of seats I was talking about at the beginning aren't enough to change it. But if the field expands, as it is a little bit now, Democrats have more chances to pick up these five or six other states that are probably a little bit leaning Republican, but are becoming much closer.
So, Jim Kessler, do you think the Democrats have a fighting chance at picking up many more seats in the Senate? Are the Democrats salivating at that opportunity? And are they putting the resources behind this effort to really gain control of the Senate, which is extremely important, especially if the Democrats retain control of the House of Representatives?
In January, I would have predicted that Democrats would end up with 49 seats. They have 47 now. I thought that they would win Colorado, Maine, and Arizona and lose Alabama, so have a net pickup of two. Now I believe the Democrats will end up with 51 seats and win the majority. I think Democrats will win in North Carolina as well, and one of the two in Montana or Iowa, where they have good candidates, and those races could be very, very close. Iowa is a state where the coronavirus could have a pretty big impact. They're starting to have high fatality rates there. You know, will they have enough money? I believe that they will. Presidential races tend to suck up a lot of the money that candidates need, but the early going so far has been that Democratic challengers in particular have been raising the money that they need to fight a competitive fight.
Well, any last words, John Fortier, from you regarding the upcoming elections, the mechanics thereof, and any worries you have?
Well, I just think we're in a bit of a holding period now, and maybe we will be for a while. This is a crisis unlike any we've seen in a generation or more. And it, oddly enough, hasn't changed the president's numbers that much, really, as you look at them directly, but it's looming there. And I'm not positive that it will go against the president, but I think it's much more volatile. And the economy is something the president really does have to watch. There certainly is the risk that just the state of the economy will be a drag on the president. And I think that's the thing that keeps the White House most up at night.
And what keeps the Democrats most up at night, Jim Kessler, Joe Biden in his basement, or, you know, the inability to get out there and make his case more publicly like President Trump does?
There are a lot of Democrats worried that Joe Biden is an afterthought because he isn't on the news all the time and he's not able to do rallies. I really think that's wrong. I think Joe Biden is actually doing what he ought to be doing. He's reaching out to the swing states quite a bit, so he is a presence there. And when your opponent is drowning, you can just stand back and watch. And I think that makes sense for him to do it at this time. The question that Americans are going to be asking themselves in November is, should we change horses midstream of a crisis? And sometimes they say yes, and sometimes they say no. Because what happens is most people have made up their minds who they're going to vote for long before the coronavirus comes along. And then there's the late-breaking voters, and how are they going to vote? And, you know, if the economy doesn't improve, if people remember that Donald Trump really was late to the game on this, you'll see those late breakers at the end coalescing behind Joe Biden. They're just saying it's going to be time for a change. That's what I'd be worried about if I was Donald Trump. It's hard to make the argument that he handled this right.
Well, on that note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier, Director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way. Gentlemen, as always, thanks so much for a terrific and enlightening conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.